your pants. Shit your pants.
Shit your pants. You're not a real fan if you don't shit your pants.
You're now listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys watch their way through Sex and the City for the first time ever, mostly. I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
My name is John Sieber.
And welcome to week two of our Sex and the City movie watch.
You have been chomping at the bit to get to this next part of the movie, and now we're here.
We can't wait to hear the guys talk about Steve and Harry, the romantic rendezvous.
Everyone this whole time has always just like have been messaging us like, we cannot wait to hear you talk for 20 minutes about Charlotte shitting herself for the whole from the very beginning. She was like, just wait, which was great. We're in the thick of the movie.
Yeah, if you listen to last week's pod, you know that we started watching the movie, and in real time, where the space that the three of us exist in right now, the Bradshaw Boys are in, we just started watching this movie like an hour and a half ago, an hour 20 ago, something like that. In podcast time, we were breaking this up into a couple of weeks, but we're watching this all the way through one time, and we're just taking little breaks to like digest it. So we just finished like an hour and a half of the movie. We're going to dive into the second thing. And man, a lot of stuff has happened.
Yeah. It's like, well, I think something to talk about before we dive into the actual movie is we had a lot of people telling us to kind of embrace for not the best Sex and City experience. People were like, it's fine, but it's like it's not the best, or like, you know, it's not my favorite thing. And Kevin, you texted out during the middle of watching, you're like, this movie rules.
I love it.
Yeah. You said you liked it better than the finale episodes.
I'm not trying to force your hand. No, I think where I'm at right now with it is I'm just like, if I would have seen this for the finale, I would have been like, man, this is solid. I loved the fact that they pushed into high end drama, like high stakes for the finale, and that tonally it was a little heavier. Carrie was in Paris. And since we went on that journey and they ended it in this like kind of like melodramatic way, melodrama in a meaning like a good melodrama, a good version of that, then it's like great to come back and have there be like a little lightness. Like, I mean, think about the finale was like dementia of a parent and like your relationship falling apart around
Russian,
you.
Russian man slapping you.
Yeah. And I loved it. Like, I 5 out of 5 stars. But also they didn't have time for poop jokes. And like, that is Sex in the City, that it's like sexy woman in the shower. Like, that is, when you think about some of the revolutionary stuff that they did, I do think it was like Carrie farting in front of Big and like things like that, that I bet girls were very excited to be like, yes, we're not just sex kittens. We wear sexy dresses, we go out, and then like we have our periods, or we fart, or like these other things. And so there's
Montezuma's revenge can befall anyone. It's not gender exclusive.
Dude, how do you think I felt being so horned up, being like, yes, Charlotte in the shower? And then she opens her mouth and I'm like, yeah. And then just a few minutes later, I was just like, which is awesome. Like,
are you asking me how I think you felt? I think horned up through the entire thing. You're a scat lover.
And because
you do.
I'm a scat man.
Yeah.
You are a scat man.
No, I actually did. I did tell you guys, I texted you a thing that I don't want to repeat it on the podcast.
That's like a rarely you'll find Kevin James Doyle unwilling to dive into personal details. So
I think I do have a fantasy that I don't feel, I feel comfortable saying it within the context of it being a fantasy, which I think like a girl doing Pilates or yoga is very hot.
Yeah. There's nothing. Hey, I'm not here to kink shame anyone. If you want to, if you're into girls, I think that's like, I think a lot of straight white or straight, I don't know, skin color, straight men would be really into seeing like attractive women like Kristen Davis doing Pilates or yoga. That's just like, that much of a kink.
I'm going to throw up, just to clarify that, I'm going to throw up a thing on our Instagram and be like, any black males want to chime in on whether they like watching girls do yoga?
There'd be a lot
black
of guys
men like- only, please.
Oh, geez.
But yeah. So I'm just really, really enjoying it. And I'm also really enjoying getting back to the basics of how we do our podcast. And I think how we do it best, which is like getting to come together and all being on the exact same page of what we watched, which is, it's really interesting to be like, if we do an article or if we do questions, we're coming at it from different ways. And it's always really fun to look at the exact same thing and then hear different perspectives. And it's like, oh, it's not just us talking about our perspectives on dating or cheating that someone asked for advice. It's like, I saw the storyline and I had no idea that you thought of it that way. And that's been really fun. A return to form for the Bradshaw boys.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Totally. This feels very icing on the cake to just like get to watch this and get to, I mean, that we said in that one tweet last time, someone was like, it's like high level fanfic. Mm-hmm. And I think in the best way that some of it is, you're just like imagine, I thought about this when we were watching it. Imagine if you were a huge fan of this show and then you go watch it in the theater.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is the best.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's great. And I feel like this is a show that could work for. If they tried to do like a Seinfeld movie, that's why the Seinfeld reunion like happened on Curb, because they were like, I don't know if we could really pull this off as the actual thing.
And like, I don't
think this kind of movie, it's like 100%.
Yeah. And if you're like a true fan of something, like I don't even know how to articulate this thought. You're not like going to see a Sex and the City movie hoping that it wins an Academy Award. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're kind of going into it knowing like, oh, this is going to be a ridiculous thing. But someone was like, it's not my favorite movie, but I love the characters. And it's like, yeah, that's why you're going to go to the movie. You're going to go see your characters in the big screen, doing funny things, interacting with each other. And like, that's the whole point of this.
I would say this too. I would say this is going to be the nexus of what we're always best at, which is taking nerd culture and nerd guy culture and girl culture and talking about it. But I do think that there is something with fan service that can feel inauthentic. And I wonder if the person that wrote in said it's like fan fiction, but like when I watched the new Star Wars trilogy, there were things that were to me eye rolly, that it was just like, and then the thing happens when you're like, you're just, you know, the thing, and then you're waiting for the thing happens. It's like, and then this happens. And when you see that over and over again, it can get boring.
Yeah.
And this to me is not that so far. They haven't, I'm trying to think of like the worst version of it in Star Wars, but like,
I think the worst version of it in Star Wars is when, I think it's when you see Yoda come out and fight. You remember? And it's like it's the first time you saw animated Yoda, when previous to that,
are you talking in the prequels?
I'm talking in the prequels. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, there's a
That scene legit rips when he fights Count Dooku and he's like ping ponging all around like a pinball, that scene is awesome. That's like
my friend
level 10 nerd boner.
Okay. So here's my comeback to that, which I can see what you're saying, but I remember my friend, when we saw it, had a huge problem with it because it was level 10 nerd boner.
Yeah, your friend's a moron then. Like, all you see of Yoda in the original trilogies is like this decrepit old guy who, you know, was a badass in the Clone Wars, but you never get to see it. You know, he can like lift X-wings with his mind force. He can train Luke how to do backpacks. Well, and like, but then you get to see him actually fight. with a little how much green of, Yoda lightsaber?
Dude, but how much? On. How
that's
much
like the
of
best
that
part?
How much of that is just making Yoda out to be the monkey in the Lion King when you finally get to see the monkey sensei fight? It sort of cheapens great. Yoda a little bit.
No,
it's just kind of
okay. I think to at first we have to do a good question after this to connect.
Also,
Star
also
Wars
I just want
to
stop. I want to stop real quick and say you will not get this conversation on any other Sex in the City
exactly.
podcast.
Exactly.
Hands down, this is a Bradshaw Boys conversation.
They're not doing
well,
this anywhere.
There's
else.
Just a lot of shitty stuff in the first Star Wars movie. Like other like it is by far the most racist movie that's ever been made. And I am including like
the
Birth of a
singer?
Nation. It is like what is his name? Gatto or Grotto, the guy who like holds slaves is obviously like the biggest parody on a Jewish person. You have like the Asian delegates who have like the worst Asian accent. You have just menstrual Jar Jar Binks walking around being a goofball. It's like, how did that movie get made? And you're going to tell me Yoda kicking ass is the worst part of those movies?
Wait, pause.
Hold on. Yoda kicking ass. He was supposed to be Indian. That's why. That's why he was an Indian stereotype. He was supposed to be the Halsum from Street Fighter 2. Okay. That's why.
This is what I think the worst version of that is not necessarily the Yoda thing. I can see your point, but it's when like a person is like, and then when they get there, lightsaber, it's a big thing. And then when you see that the third time, it happens the exact same way. It's like, look, they got it. And look, and then they connect. And I don't think they've done that in Sex in the City so far.
Yeah.
They haven't done the fill in the blank. And, mm-hmm. But they have done that. Here's a good example. They all get around and they look at the thing that Samantha wants. That is that's happened with shoes. Mm-hmm. That's happened with dresses. And it's mm-hmm. like all four girls wanting mm-hmm. some girly shit that every mm-hmm. girl wants. That's fucking mm-hmm. awesome. And it's executed in a way that is really good because it ultimately they go to the auction and they bring it back with good writing by being like, him buying that for me took something away from me. And it wasn't just fan service of here's like a rich thing that she bought and he bought for her. End of story. It has an emotional element of like, now I feel like I'm losing something to this man and there is something underpinning it. Or else it would just be like, oh, that's the same thing they do in every Sex in the City thing. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah.
And I think they're really, I think MPK has to be like, I could imagine him when hopefully we get to interview him sometime, but I would imagine that he's a writer that is like, that's great. Why? You know, that's great that she gets shoes. What do the shoes mean? Or like, why does he give that? Because so much bad writing is like, oh, then they get to do the fun, awesome thing. Then they get to do the trip. And everything in the Sex and City operating on level 10 is always being like, what's the emotional underpinning? What do the characters mm-hmm. want? Mm-hmm. How does this benefit them and how does this hurt them? And I think that the movie so far is doing a great job at all.
I agree.
Actually, real quick, good example of that I think we're starting to see pay off in the movie is we didn't talk about this last episode, but when Carrie does the 80s movie fashion walk of all her dresses and they all get champagne and they're all like, take it, leave it, like putting up their signs. And it's such Sex in the City candy because you've got the girls together again.
Yes.
Samantha's like, a lot of good things have happened in this apartment. So I flew in and you're getting to see fashion and you're getting to see their personalities. But now you've seen this thing where it's like, that was literally their goodbye to their old life. Now you've had everything fall apart and she's back in that. So it's like it already kind of set up a thing that was like, you think it's just candy. Really, it's this like you're set up for this one thing. Now we're back at these like expectations are shattered. Where's life now? That's really good writing.
Yeah.
Really
like good. I would, this is like a summary thought, but I'm going to say it now anyway. The reason I'm like liking this movie so far is because if I were given the opportunity to go see this right now in the theater with the two of you and Katie and a big ass bucket of popcorn, that sounds like the best night ever. That sounds like the easiest $13, mm-hmm. $14 or $20 if you're in New York, like money I've ever spent in my life. Like
also the way that you said that, it was like me, Kevin, Katie, and a big ass bucket of popcorn. I just imagine the popcorn being like Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
It's like a big ass bucket of popcorn
that's how big
anamorphosized.
That's how big I want my popcorn. I want all of it.
I, I gave you 5 stars.
I'm the only one who's left, starting and traversing all the way through your Sex and the City funnel down to Star Wars and then back out.
Yeah.
I didn't hit the 15-second skip.
I do think...
so many people are going to be depressed when they hit 15 seconds, still hear me ranting about Yoda. Another 15 seconds, still hear me ranting about Yoda. Another 15 seconds, now we're on Jar Jar Binks. They're going to be like, what the fuck?
I know. And then we bring it back to talk about like how good the writing is. And then they're back here like, fucking come on! I will say that a really sick way that would be awesome after COVID is done... and when we are able to do this, because we would have liked to do it like somehow this way, but if we can rent out a theater and mm-hmm. all go see the movie, just fucking red carpet.
100%. Alamo Drafthouse.
Here's what we have to do. We have to also, without any assistance from any of our stylish or fashion friends, we have to dress up in what we think is the most fashionable outfit we can think of.
Oh, yeah.
And we just show up looking like absolute turds. And Anahita has to just judge which one of us is the most fashionable.
That would be so fun. I'm torn between doing it at a movie theater or doing it at CarrieCon that we're going to do at Bowery Ballroom over the course of five days.
I thought about this. Like when we do that, we need to come up with things that like we need to turn watching Sex and the City, the movie, into one of the experiences, like when people watch The Room or something.
Like Lebowski like, Fest, yeah.
Yeah, like when we'll get to this, but like when the bouquet swipe comes out, everyone has to throw flowers at the screen. Like we need to have things. And when Charlotte screams no, Kevin has to go up on stage naked.
And we all just have to go, no, no,
no. And we all have to like everyone, we feed everyone beans before and then everyone farts at the same time when Charlotte does that. We're like, save it. All right, 3, 2.
Okay, everyone, shit your pants now. Shit your pants, shit your pants.
Shit your pants. You're not a real fan if you don't shit your pants. And then we're like, all right, special guest. And then Kristen Davis comes out.
She comes out wearing an adult diaper.
And it depends. Oh my gosh.
The and funny thing is that like we have interviewed her and talked with her. It's so funny to just make that joke. No,
Kevin, here's what you have to do. Get super drunk the rest of the night tonight and muster up the courage to ask her to come to our live show and shit her pants.
She just gets a DM and she's just like, oh my gosh, these boys are so crazy. Listen, they're just the funniest. Let me see what they say. She's zooming with Sarah Jessica Parker, just like and Willie Garson. She's like, those boys, you have to do their podcast again. Sarah said, we're doing a live event next year once COVID's all done. Oh my gosh, that's going to be so fun. They want me to come and dress up in an adult diaper and shit my pants on stage. That sounds so fun. Yes, let's do it.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
I love that this is where we got to over the course of the entire podcast.
Dude, the ticket, instead of putting like an X on your hand to show that you're of age, you have to just rub cream cheese on your face.
CarrieCon.
Yo, CarrieCon's going to be a real thing, people. And if you aren't shitting your pants at CarrieCon, then you aren't getting the full experience.
Oh my gosh.
My face hurts from laughing.
All right. All right, John, give us the overview. Give us the overview of where we're at in the Sex and the City movie 1.
All right. So we ended with the rehearsal dinner the first time we watched. This is where we started with this watch. And rehearsal dinner was pretty standard. Samantha's given a toast. Something big that happened at the rehearsal dinner. Steve came to see Miranda while they're outside smoking cigars. By the way, great scene to see like all the bros outside smoking cigars. Dude.
Awesome. So I wish Aiden would have just randomly been there too. Aiden should have been there to get a stogie with him.
If Aiden walked by with like his like now 7-year-old baby strapped in the front of his jacket.
Yeah, hey, and the baby had a stogie in its mouth.
He can't even see around the baby's head because it just carries his father's genetic trait of having an enormous head.
Okay. And the baby's just like, can we keep walking? Like he has full vocabulary.
Yeah. Steve comes, tries to apologize to Miranda. She isn't having it. She says, you broke me. And then finally Miranda goes in, talks to John aka Mr. Big, and is like, don't get married, it just ruins everything. So the ladies are having their little night before the wedding get together where they're laughing, telling stories. Carrie calls Big, or Big calls Carrie. He's kind of freaking out about writing the vows, which, by the way, maybe since it's his third marriage, but if this was his first marriage, you're telling me a finance bro like him would just be sitting alone at his house rather than like doing lines of coke off a stripper's ass.
Totally. Yeah.
Anyway.
Totally.
Kevin has a thought.
I do want to. It's a good thought, and I do want to talk about something. I think it's written to show that he doesn't have friends, because his one friend was loser, and he was by himself with Raul, and Carrie had all of her friends around him.
I have that in my notes that like when you see him melting down, he's completely alone, and it keeps cutting to Carrie having like the best. Same exact thing. It's just showing him like being totally alone.
He kind of needs to be reassured that it'll be just the two of them, that he'll have her. That makes a lot more sense why he says that. Next day, the wedding, which is like a super fun scene. They're all looking gorgeous. They're all dressed to the nine. Willie's there. Anthony's there. And they go to the library, and Big can't muster the courage to step inside. He's stuck in his car. And Katie turned to me and was like, as an actor, this is everyone's dream moment, where like Carrie gets out of the car, smashes a bouquet of flowers over Big's head, which is going to be a huge point in our Carrie Con when everyone throws the flowers. And then Charlotte, like some insane acting, like
so good.
Mama Bear comes out and it's just like, no, no. And her face is just like,
yeah,
it was insane. Mm-hmm. So then Carrie's depressed. They go on the honeymoon that she booked. Mm-hmm. And she kind of gets over her depression a little bit by laughing, comes back to the city. What's that?
Doesn't she order a bunch of drinks to their table on another room's check, the Preston table?
That's Big's last name.
Oh, it's John Preston.
Yeah.
Preston.
Okay. Oh, it's on his. Okay. Gotcha. It's on his money. Gotcha.
That's where
John James Preston. JJP. You're Preston in this.
Yeah. Yeah, because John.
Or you're Preston.
Kevin James, you're Preston.
Oh, because I'm Kevin James Doyle. He's John Sieber. You're Preston.
Oh, I'm Preston.
You're Corey Preston.
Kevin. Everyone knows that's my middle name. Yeah.
And that's where Charlotte gets a little shower water into her mouth, gets some Montezuma's revenge, shits her pants. And then Carrie goes back kind of reinvigorated. She hires a personal assistant, Jennifer Hudson. And now I'm trying to think it's like the seasons have passed because Charlotte is pregnant, which is amazing. And the last thing we saw is Carrie just gave her assistant, Jennifer Hudson Louise, a pair of, a Louis Vuitton bag.
Yeah.
And that's where
gave her the Meet Me in St. Louis,
which I think is like DVD, the start of Act Three. It's like the conflict was the wedding, getting stood up, and now she is like redefining herself as Carrie. She dyed her hair brown. She is has an assistant. She said giving her assistant that bag was the greatest gift she's ever done, or like the happiest she's ever been. So it's like this new Carrie Bradshaw moment. So what do you want to talk about first?
I have a thing. Well, one thing that line that she says, she tells Jennifer Hudson, your 20s is for like falling in love, your 30s is for reflecting on that, and your 40s is paying for the drinks. That's when she talks to her about going to meet the guy with the booty call. So she's like grown. I have a quick thing I want to talk about where I texted Joel.
I really hope
during,
you try to sell us a timeshare live on.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing. Have you ever been to Ocala, Florida?
Oh my gosh, Ocala got me so bad.
I have a quick thing on air that I'd like to talk to you and all the listeners about. Okay.
We're texting as we're talking, like, does this have to go in the pod? Why are you doing it now? And you're like, I just got it's
trust
a really
me,
great.
I'm gonna put a link in the show notes, everyone.
We have to
if
act
you
tonight.
Like if you like a white sand beach. No, so I texted y'all while we were watching, and I was like, there's no, there's been very minimal Carrie voiceover. And I'd have to go back and watch, but what's interesting is like, there's Carrie voiceover in the very, very beginning where she's like, does the intro of who all four of them are, you know, when they get into the thing. And then I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a ton of it. And then I noticed it comes back. The voiceover comes back. I think when Charlotte, like craps herself or something like that, when Charlotte's in the shower, I think is the first time it comes back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What's funny is
that's when Stella gets her groove back.
That's when Charlotte gets her poop back. Yeah. Forgive me. No, but what's funny is her, that's when her voiceover comes back in. That leads to Carrie laughing. And when she says at the dinner before, am I ever going to laugh again? And Samantha's like, yes, when something's really, really funny. So my like weird movie theory thing is that like we have this whole buildup of the wedding and it being the conflict and Carrie kind of losing herself. And then you get this voiceover and it leads to Carrie like losing her mind and all of them laughing. It kind of gets her back to herself. And that kind of gets us back into what the show actually is, which is the four people back together. So we sort of have this like, this sort of like Hollywood movie romance wedding break. And then when she finally gets back to where she's able to laugh again and start to find herself again, you start to get the VO coming back in, which makes it feel like a long extended Sex in the City show, which is interesting to me. Cause I was like, this feels just like a movie without her VO. And it actually comes back at that point.
That's like where she super finds herself. Interesting.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's true. Man.
No,
I don't know if that's what it, I think it's true, but I don't know.
I didn't think about that. I'd love to watch it again. I hope we get to watch again and look for that. Something else I didn't notice is like kind of the shitty friend that Big has and then being alone. Cause I was like, why is he so worried about Carrie? Like, so yeah, I guess, are we supposed to like believe that Big is just like lonely? Doesn't have friends? Doesn't have like loved ones? What do you think the purpose of that was?
Another interesting thing I noticed there too was that she's calling him John the whole movie. And that one time that he texts her when she's with her friends,
she said Big.
She said Big. That's the only time she calls him Big, I think.
Someone messaged us on the Instagram and said they use Big and John. They use those like based on how he's acting and how, you know, like those are two different characters. He's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, you know?
Yeah, totally. That's super interesting.
One thing, the guy that plays Carl, who's the friend at the firm, that guy lives on my block.
And are you serious? Also,
yes, really? He lives on my block and I saw him at the laundromat and I talked to him one time and he's like, okay. And MPK created the comeback and that is Valerie Cherish, Lisa Kudrow's husband in the comeback.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy. Yeah.
So he's like a great like character actor. He's in tons of stuff. But I, at the laundromat one time, I was just like, oh, I like the comeback. And he's like, thanks. And then just like walked away. It's like, you should never talk to people. But, and then also John, the, cause I have this in my notes, the, Steve talks to Miranda. I mean, that's where we're at too. That's how this opened up for us at Budokan that's the restaurant Budokan by Chelsea.
Oh, they were at Budokan. That's where that was.
Yeah. I remember that from my tour days,
but, dude, that's amazing.
When they were at the rehearsal dinner is I think when we started this and Steve and Miranda have their combo.
Yeah. Sorry if I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
I mean, I only had it cause it's the first thing in my notes. But
surprisingly, my notes once again just say Fergie and Big looks better. I don't know why. I'm just really stuck on my humps. I do want to say that like Samantha's storyline is really, I want to pay attention to it a little bit more because we are starting to get storylines for all of the women. Samantha's storyline has become like not just like I am not having enough sex. It's more like my world is now revolving around someone else rather than myself, and that might be unhealthy. And you know, she is Smith's agent now, and then she is Smith's girlfriend, which both are things that, you know, are new to Samantha, and she's kind of losing identity of who she is. And like we said earlier, it was they used that ring to kind of show that she is, her life now is revolving on Smith rather than herself. So, I think that's an interesting storyline as well. And, Love the neighbor. Love Samantha's neighbor who's
That hot neighbor who's just constantly
guy's an attractive dude.
He's very attractive.
I love when they were showing him have sex at one time and instead they just showed like his butt muscles pulsing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Just squeezing those glutes. Yeah. Great glutes.
Good for him. Yeah. Great glutes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Let's start with Samantha's storyline.
Cool. So She's back and forth from LA to New York.
Yeah.
I mean,
also she pulls some major Samantha Friend moves in this too. When the wedding thing falls apart, I don't know if you caught her line, but she says like, you guys get Carrie out of here. I'll deal with all this. And she's like, basically I'll deal with shutting down a wedding at the New York Public Library.
Dude, like, how good of Samantha like a military move. General would like Samantha be?
100%.
Yeah.
It's just like, though, like people like her who can just see the world on such a macro level, like she like does not get stressed out by the details, but just like knows the mechanisms of how things work and knows what levers to push. She's just like, I got all this. Doesn't stress me out. You get one thing out of here and I will shut down everything else. Those people are so incredibly fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's wild.
No, I totally agree with you because those are people that are like, they have a certain set of skills that are, and then there's other people that are good at things that are just so detail or like she's detail oriented. And she also is the maid of honor too, which is interesting when that was chosen. That makes total sense. Yeah. But
totally. Were you surprised when she was chosen, or did you always think is like Samantha always been the best friend?
She has, but I don't think it's ever been written in stone until this moment that it's like, we've talked about it a lot on the show, but it's interesting that from a story perspective, when they sat down, they were like, oh yeah, she's the maid of honor, or else they wouldn't have had that. They would have been like, you're all the maids of honor. You know, that seems like it would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of think like Miranda would have been the maid of honor. I always thought Samantha was the best friend, but I think if I was going to ask Carrie, I would suspect she would say Miranda is her best friend. But maybe Carrie and I see her best friends in the same way, which makes me like her more.
What do you think with Miranda? Okay, Miranda clearly says this out of anger to Carrie or to Big, which was also a cool thing to see Big be there to comfort. It's almost like a crossover episode when it's like, oh, Big and Miranda alone in a scene that rarely happens. So it's cool for him to be there to comfort her, to be like, hey, are you okay? Obviously it makes sense that she's a little stressed or upset, but, and then by the end of what we watched, like she was like to Charlotte, like, this is my fault because I said this to Big. Does she bear responsibility? Should she tell Carrie?
I think she did a major mess up. I think like what she did was not just, I think what she did is pretty bad. I'll give you a real life example of my embarrassing early years when I was like 23. I had just broken up with one of my girlfriends at the time, and my friends Kathleen and Nathan were getting married, and I drunkenly walked up to Kathleen at the wedding reception and I said, "I love you, but I don't believe in love." And then I walked home. And like, one of the most cringy things I've ever done. Not okay. Not, and now we can laugh at it now, 20 years later or whatever, but like, not an okay thing to do. Not an okay thing for Miranda to do. Not an okay thing for Carrie to break up with Aiden right before a wedding. Like, you gotta, at some point, you got to, no matter how drunk you get, take responsibility and realize that those days, those monumental days, are not about your feelings. And even if Miranda feels that, which she certainly did, it's not right for her to pull aside a groom who might already be wrestling with thoughts and difficult things and to say something like that. So like, is Miranda responsible? I don't know. Did she fuck up? 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
And it's understandable because she was in the place that she is. And I do think that there is like a, it's so funny because she's doing nothing wrong by keeping Steve at a distance, but it's like classic Miranda to try to deal with something even as painful as this. Steve should not have cheated. Wrong for Steve to cheat. But like, what sucks about life is that once, like, you can never go back. They can never go to pre-cheat. That's done. That's happened. And I think there is a thing that a lot of people have, but Miranda's going through right now, that is just like, we're going to split the, we're going to do this. This is it. Then it's fixed. And I will not talk to you about it ever again. And then it won't. And it's like, unfortunately, that won't happen. You can never go back. You can only go forward. And just stopping, never talking to him again, is not going to help things, even if they decide to be together or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that's going to come out with other people, I guess. That's going to come out for her to, like, that wouldn't have happened if she took Steve to the side and was just like, "You can't do this. I need to not talk to you for a month."
Yeah.
Or like, "I don't know when I can talk to you." She probably would have gone back in and not, you know, there's some metaphor that's like, once you start kind of breaking stuff, it breaks other areas of your life. Like, once you're late for work, then you lose money, then you can't pay rent, then you do this, then you get in trouble, like it snowballs. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's this right here. That's like, the way that she's handling this is going to end up affecting people around her. Well,
then also something
her.
That's interesting that happens in that scenario is then it gets out of control and people claim to be helpless. They're like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. It's out of my control. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you were late to work. Like, you stayed out drinking instead of setting your alarm, which caused you to lose your money, which caused you to not be able to pay rent, which caused like, and there are exceptions, of course.
Yeah,
I'm not making generalizations, but oftentimes people do this thing and then they let that snowball get out of control so they can say like, it's out of my control. It's like, I can't handle it. It's just the way it is. And like, Miranda might be in one of those situations where she's just like, "I'm sorry, Steve, I just can't. It's out of my control how I feel. We are just done. We're broken." And it's like, maybe if like you didn't do X and then you didn't do Z, wouldn't have made you tell him in the middle of sex that let's just get it over with. Like, if you rewind, you can see that you took the first step towards this direction. So,
one final thing back to Steve, that kind of shows the carnage of cheating, that it's like, when you cheat, it opens up like uncontrollable, like, pain and carnage that I feel like, it's always funny when you think about people cheating, you're just like, and then you come and he's like, "Fuck, I just cheated. on the person I love. And now I have to tell her, and it's going to destroy her. And just imagine what he was like literally all of the lead up is like, oh, I'm going to get this thing that I want. And then you do that and it just unleashes this pain and carnage in your life that it's like you had your house, you had your kid, you had your wife, you had all these great things.
You were in the backyard spraying Brady with a hose like just 5 minutes ago.
Just
freaking spraying his ginger face with cold, wet Brooklyn water. And now, you know, you're sleeping under the bar at Scout like a bum.
That's Scout, you bum.
Freaking was Steve. Debbie really worth it, Steve? Getting back together and having one last roll in the hay with Debbie.
Debbie might have been. Dude, could you imagine?
You think it was with Steve, Debbie? It
wasn't. Steve snuck in with Leeds and Debbie. A hot little threesome.
He got a freaking Leeds Debbie sandwich. If he was the meat in that, man. No, it's what you said earlier, though, Kevin. Either earlier this one or last time, like, that cheating thing, like, it removes all the grace. So it's like all that stuff Miranda is now like, what didn't bother me does, but like she can't hold back anything now.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
But there's another thing that she said that I was curious to see what John would say and maybe would always say, but Miranda said to Steve in that moment when she was like, you broke us or you broke me or whatever. Did she say I changed myself for you or I changed my life for you?
Yes.
I think she said myself. Did she say myself?
She said I changed. You're right. She's like, I changed who I was for you.
I changed who I was for you. And we have said multiple times, and John, you are the resident married person here, but we've all been in long relationships. And like we have said, though, it's like not a great thing. It's a hard thing to do when you change yourself for someone in a
relationship. It's
impossible. You can't do it.
It's not
a good move.
Yeah.
I'm not. I want to be clear that none of us are saying that absolves Steve from cheating. It does not.
But
you change yourself to get into a relationship. You're setting yourself up for like resentment later on.
Yeah. Your spouse can hone you, can like make you better at who you are.
I let you hone me, Steve. You honed me.
I wanted to, if you would have honed me more, I wouldn't have had to go somewhere else. I'm trying to get honed.
Listen, I just learned last year
that, you know, that little circle thing in a knife set, that's not a sharpener.
I was like,
oh, this is sharpening my knife. No, you're right. It's honing it. It's just getting rid of like the micro imperfections. So I think, anytime you change who you are for anyone, but either romantic relationship, friendship, work. I mean, unless you're like, you know, smoking PCP and you drop it for someone, like don't change who you are. That's not going to work out well. That's going to lead to you not wanting to change positions during sex and freaking out when someone tells you you have Harry's jizz on your face.
And it turns out he was the one with Harry's jizz on his face.
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, what do you think with
have we referenced the Harry's jizz thing in this episode yet?
No, don't bring it up.
Keep going. Kevin, what's your point? What's your point, Kevin? Go.
Jeremy, edit it.
And when we say edit it, clip it out to 4 seconds and then just repeat it for the rest for 1 hour.
Loop it.
Harry's jizz on my face. Harry's jizz on my face.
Harry's jizz on my face. Add like a nice, sick beat track to that. Load it, and then put a video of Evan Handler jerking off on YouTube, and then I think we'll be rich. I think that's how we make money.
That's how we start our first Bradshaw Boys TikTok.
Check out our OnlyFans. It's just Harry jerking off.
It's just Harry Goldenblatt jerking off. Okay. So listen. So what? Why didn't she hit him? First of all, that was a really funny scene with really great acting, but with the dramaticness, I think they had to like go back and forth with
scene?
With the wedding, the flowers banging flowers against him. That was like,
do you know what song they should have played there? Do you remember that
let
one?
The bodies hit the floor.
No, do you know like, oh, what you say?
Oh yeah.
What you say? And she just bashes flowers every time. Oh, what you say? There's a good Saturday Night Live skit that uses that song. By the way, it's great.
It's an amazing Lonely Island sketch. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they should have done this. They should have done Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the... And then it's just Charlotte's face and it's like... No!
who sings that song?
Drowning Pool.
Drowning Pool. The lead singer died. But my question is... Way to ruin the pod, Kevin. Why didn't there seem like there was an open... Like he was apologizing... And was he apologizing, saying, I'm sorry? Or was he saying, like, I will go in and do it? Because it's like, that's like $100,000 they flushed down the tube because she didn't want to stop and listen to him.
Dude, no, there's no time for her to stop and listen to them. Like,
okay.
I think at that point, it's a business decision versus like having your heart broken and being humiliated.
If you walk into the chapel to get married,
what I'm saying is like, she made the right move.
If you walk in to get married and you walk out unmarried, I don't think there's any like, hold on, time out. Let's talk this out before. And then you have to walk back in again. It's like,
okay.
I'll say this. I think the writers really missed an opportunity to really call back to this series. Charlotte should have turned to Carrie and looked at her and said, maybe he jerked off before. It's what they should have done.
Oh man, that would have been so good.
I mean, come on.
Just go straight from no, or like, while they're like on the steps. Dude.
While they're on the steps. If we ever interview Michael Patrick King, we need to ask him that and just be like, did you ever think? Also, Also in that moment, this is the smallest thing, but did you notice when Samantha hands her iPhone and she goes, I don't know how to use this? That's right after the iPhone came out.
I know.
And everyone was like, it doesn't work as a phone.
And it's funny. Yeah, it's
also Carrie. It's not that it was never that hard to figure out.
Such a Carrie move. Such
Funny. I think you're right. I think that I'm saying it from a perspective of like, give him a chance. But it's like he clearly. They use the phone thing as like him reaching out, but really like. He had some sort of opportunity to work his shit out, even by dancing around it. You know what I mean?
The day of the wedding, if to anyone listening out there, the day of the wedding is not, there's no excuses for hesitation or like you can be nervous. You can be nervous because it's a big deal. Like what you're doing is a life. You're making a big decision in front of a lot of people, but like hesitating, or like any sort of like withdrawalness is get that done before the wedding, get that done like weeks before the wedding.
Would you suggest someone get that done? Does that like through counseling, through having a hard talk about being like, I am nervous? Like how would they actually get that done?
Yeah. Like Big should have been like, well, like that's why maybe Miranda is a lot more to blame for this, but like, yeah, you should do some sort of counseling. Katie and I did counseling because like the place that we were getting married required it. We had to talk to three different counselors, and it was great because we like got to talk through like any reservations, any issues, any hesitations that we have, expectations, money shit. And it's like, yeah, you should be, if you're thinking about making a commitment to someone like getting married, you should be talking about those issues way ahead of time. You brought up last episode that Katie and I did get in a big fight about our wedding, probably the biggest fight that we've ever been into. It was from the stress of planning the wedding, but I'm not sure if I've talked about this on the pod before. I'm not 10 years prior to meeting Katie, I was having a couple beers with our mutual friend, Harlan Elford, who is a guest on the podcast. And I made a promise to him. I said, if I ever get married, I want you to dance in my wedding. And if you ever get married, I get to sing God Bless the Broken Road by Rascal Flatts a cappella at your wedding. And we shook on it. And so Katie and I got engaged. We were at
the listeners that didn't listen to the Harlan episode, explain your side of the bet.
Shame on you.
Shame on
you. But also Harlan is a trained professional classical
dancer
ballerino.
Yeah, he danced.
It's not
he
just
danced,
like a goofy, funny dance.
Right. He danced professionally for, you know, for 5-6 years. He moved to New York to dance professionally.
And in our episode, he talks about it, but he danced for Petrovsky.
Yeah.
He was in a concert for Alexander. What's his real name?
Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Baryshnikov, who played Petrovsky.
One could think, oh, it's funny because Harlan is, he looks like he's a big boy. He's barrel chested. He's north of 200 pounds, north of 230 probably. And
all right. Let's be nice.
You know what?
Friends.
Hey, let's come on.
That's so funny. That is like, that is like the hardest little shit. You could have just said 200. No one knows. I mean,
okay, north of 240. Do I hear 245?
Dude, meanwhile, someone else is on the other side bidding on Harlan's weight, just boosting up the price.
It's Harlan.
Like Smith. And he's like, trust me, it was a long Christmas. I do see 260. Yes. Sold. Okay, go ahead.
Oh man. And so we get engaged. Katie's at our engagement party. And that's like the first time she heard about it. And she was like, he's not going to dance. Like, she's like, I don't necessarily want him dancing in our ceremony. And I was like, I made a promise and I really did want him to dance in the ceremony. And so we got like a little, there was definitely a lot of conflict there because she thought it was like a joke. And I was like, you know, you have friends playing guitar. You have friends reading poetry. You have your brother singing a song. My artistic expression is I want my 230 plus pound who looks like a Viking to dance, to perform an interpretive dance.
Well,
that was a big thing that we had to work through. It was challenging. But he did end up dancing at the wedding, and Katie was like, it was one of the most special things. He took it very seriously. He rehearsed, he hired a choreographer, and it was like a really, it was a really great thing. So
wait, can I ask a question though? Because I think there's two things. One, you're really funny. You're able to engage in very funny, ironic humor and very like a lot of our humor that like that is not on the Bradshaw Boys, like can be like very weird internet humor that is like super like other people wouldn't get it. So there's like that part of you. And then there's also a part of you. And that's like kind of where the joke comes from. When you 10 years ago, when you're having beers, it's like, you got to dance at my fucking wedding, dude.
Yeah.
But then there's also the part that, like, I guess, what did it mean to you to have that happen? And then why would you not back down from it? And why was it scary for Katie in the context of like this movie is basically about people's expectations not being communicated? And there is a very, there is like a lot of different situations where you guys have that mega fight and then the wedding gets called off.
Yeah.
Because it's, and then it all goes back to like, it goes back to being about what, not being about the dance, but being about the fact that like, I want to feel beautiful on my wedding, not to have your dumb friend make fun of our vow. You know what I mean? Like the reason why you said it became one of your biggest fights, I'm sure, is because of a miscommunication of like what the ceremony meant.
Totally. She thought it was like, it was nothing more than like a drunk bet that we made. Mm-hmm. And granted it started there, but also like it was funny and ironic, which is fine because that's who I am. It was about me like making a promise to someone and like the joy of a 10-year promise coming to fruition. I like to consider myself someone who's like stubbornly loyal. So it's like an exemplification of that. It's also like, I don't love, I'm not a huge music person. Like someone like going up there and playing an organ, a friend, that's not something that is like impactful for me, but someone getting up and doing like a dance, even if it's tongue in cheek and funny, is also like an expression of art that like I would more like be into. So it was like when she understood that it was not just a drunk bet, but it was something that like actually, something that meant something to me, she got on board and could see it through that lens. And then it was like, oh, this actually is like a really beautiful thing. And it was a dance to Aaron Neville and Linda Ronstadt's I Don't Know Much, But I Know I Love You.
And I don't know how much.
Yeah, and it was a beautiful. It was a beautiful dance by a beautiful man. So, yeah, that was by far the biggest fight and probably like most stressful 3 weeks in our relationship. But we didn't have that fight the day before the wedding. We had that fight at Dizzy's 8 months before our wedding, sitting next to the actor from The Americans, the FBI guy from the next door neighbor, who definitely looked at me while Katie was crying like I was a horrible, horrible husband.
You know, the main fight that Beeman. Ended my engagement was our invitation list. And it was whether to invite a female friend that I've never been interested in. I've never had a relationship at all. We never romantic in any way, just a friend. And it was about making our invitation list. And it was about like jealousy with the invitation list. And then partially as we were like going down from like 200 people to like 150 or 150 to 100 or whatever. And it was like, at first it was like, oh, here's these people. And it drilled down to like me not realizing like, of course this person will be there, you know?
Yeah.
But then once you had to be like, why are you so, I'm like, cause it's my friend. And then from another person's perspective, it's like, why do you want this girl here so
yeah,
bad?
Why do you care so much?
Yeah. Mm. And that actually, if we should have been together, that would have been a place that would have been like, oh, I understand that now. And instead it like drove us apart that I'm like, I'm definitely not getting married to someone who like is scared that I can't have one of my closest friends who happens to be a woman. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it was one of those like, I mean, thankfully it wasn't the day of, but it, yeah. you know, it was a few weeks out. Mm-hmm. But it was another one of those things that it was like, definitely a where the rubber meets the road moment that you should make sure you have those conversations and not bury them, because I think they can lead you closer to who you will ultimately want to be with, rather than being like, oh, let's just think about that later. And then 3 years in, you realize you have a major issue with jealousy.
Exactly. Or
Katie doesn't respect your care of your friends. Yeah. Or you don't respect that Katie wanted, that Katie likes special things. You know,
totally.
Like they're always deeper things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And plus like the best part was the reverend, the priest who, the pastor, whatever they're called, who married us. She like came with the church that we used. Her face looked exactly identical to when Charlotte was shitting her pants while she was watching Harlan dance. So it was like,
she was not, everyone else thought it was beautiful except for that woman.
Well, we told her in order to allow it in that particular church, we told her that it was a liturgical dance. And she's like, I love liturgical dances.
You know what? Oh, that's gosh. So funny though, because it's like 20 years ago, you wouldn't even be able to be a minister because you're a woman. And the second you're able to be a minister, you're looking down on some beautiful dancer in church. Like you gotta get more progressive, lady.
What if you weighed south of 200 pounds, would it have been okay? Huh?
It was Judith? The weight.
We gotta go. We gotta watch the rest of this
man,
movie.
So we got more stuff going on. Where real quick before we get back into this, where do we leave? What's happening next in the movie? Samantha is checking out her neighbor and going shopping for like retail therapy. Mm. Charlotte is pregnant
and jogging again.
Carrie just gave her assistant her purse. Yeah. And then Miranda, she's like shopping for Halloween with Carrie, and basically
we haven't seen Miranda in quite a while. Yeah. She's got a new apartment in Chinatown.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Got a new apartment in Chinatown, which used to be Ukrainian village or something like, or Ukrainian section of town. Yeah. There are. Totally.
Jennifer Hudson, I wonder if she's going to have, I mean, it seems like this is the part where she became like a little more significant and they're already doing a bit of a football handoff of like next generation type person.
Like she's the new Carrie or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there will be a J Hud? Well, Corey, you can't answer. John, do you think there will be a, like she gets a writing job or she like gets a fashion job, like something beyond the assistant? Do you like Carrie?
Carrie will see her see her out with her friends, and she will like have that like look of pride on her face. Because I think like Carrie's in her 40s. It's now her job. It's now her turn to buy the drinks, and it's now her turn to like set up someone in her 20s for that life.
What does the job that she wants? I'm trying to remember.
She runs like a Rent the Runway type company. She's like running like a Rent the Runway type.
I thought she just knew it. No, she just knows about that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
I'm not sure what the job is that you want. Or maybe she'll give like pass along relational advice, because Jennifer Hudson seems to be on this boudet call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's watch the rest of the boudet call.
Yeah.
Let's watch the rest of this. The rest of this wonderful film.
Here we go.
About to later, taters.
See you later, next tates. Week. We're going to go watch now. Later, tates.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cabin, Kevin James Doyle, and John Sieber. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and narrated by Katie Sieber. This podcast is part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Check out all their great podcasts at seltzerkings.com. You can find the boys on their socials at The Bradshaw Boys or on their website at thebradshawboys.com. And as always, if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.
You're not a real fan if you don't shit your pants.